So the first thing we need to do is set our motivation. And I usually ask someone else to do that. So, how about you, Lindsay? Do you mind making a motivation for this afternoon? I mean, you can make it as simple as to come enlighten for all sentient beings. I know I put you on the spot. Do you mind?
Yeah. motivation for this session.
Yeah, just for this session. Yeah.
From my point of view, and I don't know whether anybody else thinks the same, to motivation for all the things that we do for other people's healing as well as our own, because so many people in the group seem to be involved in that, that the clarity of sharing, well, the clarity we get from sharing and asking questions, dedicate that to our work.
Okay.
That's what's going to motivate me, I think.
Okay.
Is that sort of thing you wanted me to do?
Exactly.
Okay.
We usually, thank you, we usually include and eventually attain enlightenment for all sentient beings.
Yeah.
Because then it, you know, no matter what virtue we do, we want to head it in that direction, otherwise we might just end up a rich puppy next lifetime or something. Well, this is a kind of a challenging practice for being introduction to Tantra. So I know there's a lot of details we need to get into, but there's also some very basic things we need to get into, such as divine pride and clear appearance, which is the main thrust of Tantra. So Is anybody here, like, never done any tantric practice at all? It sounds like everyone's done some. What about you, Georgia? A little bit.
Only one yonya.
Yeah. Okay.
Nunez, that's all I've done.
No, you did a Chinrezig retreat last year with me.
Oh, was that tantric?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anytime there's a deity involved.
Well, there you go. That's how much I know.
It was called introduction to tantric. That was the way it was.
Much easier than this one.
Yeah, this is quite tricky.
Yeah.
That one, all we had to do was arise as the day and say a mantra, and this one has a lot of complicated visualizations. And we don't have to do it that way. You know, if it seems too complicated, we can just make it very simple. I mean, there is a very simple white Tara practice where you just arise as white, you know, one page. You rise as white Tara and recite her mantra and visualize like you do with other simple tantras. You know, you just visualize light rays going out and healing all sentient beings, you know. This has a lot of different visualizations in it.
But the visualizations are there for a purpose.
So. Yeah, they are. And I think they're... I mean, this was just our... We've only tried it once. So we have, you know, four or five sessions. I think four sessions of this a day. For 8 days, so, and even if we just get a taste, but the main thing we need to know to practice Tantra is the, well, two things. There's the three principal aspects of the path. Does anybody know what they are?
Renunciation,
bodhicitta, wisdom. Yeah, okay, right, you've all done, you all have studied. Do you know that? Renunciation, bodhicitta, and right view. Okay, so given that we know that, and given that most of you have studied like the basic program or Lam Rim, then we're prepared to practice Tantra. And so here, what we need to hold foremost in our mind is whatever experience we have of emptiness. Because without that, we're not really, really practicing Tantra. And we pretend, you know, but the goal is because in Tantra, the antidote to samsara, the antidote to having five contaminated aggregates controlled by delusion karma, which is definition of samsara, is the antidote is clear appearance and divine pride, which means that we no longer believe that what we see exists from its own side, right? So we know that everything's empty. And the deity arises out of that. And the reason it's the fast path is because it's only the Buddha, a Buddha, that experiences relative and ultimate truth simultaneously. But in Tantra, Tantra is called the resultant path because we pretend, it's called bringing the result into the path because we act like a Buddha even though we're not a Buddha. And so we're supposed to think that all speech is mantra, you know, all beings are deities, and everything we see is in the nature of emptiness. And so clear appearance is the appearance of the deity. Myself, rather than appearing as my ordinary form, I'm appearing as the deity. And divine pride is I am the deity, the sense of I am the deity. But divine pride, and we talked about it in the last retreat before last, is that it seems to me that it might be a little bit less confusing if we call it divine dignity, because pride gets kind of caught up with this sense of, you know, pride, you know, ordinary pride. But this is not ordinary pride. This is just the sense. That's why I like the word dignity, you know, that I am, you know, because you think of a dignified person. You know, they walk with good posture and they, you know, without being necessarily proud, they have a good sense of self-esteem, you know. And so we need that too. And so the divine pride is the experience of emptiness, and that this emptiness is manifesting as the deity. And so I wanted to read something to you out of this commentary that I thought was the best ever I've ever seen. Let's see if I can find it now. I didn't mark it. About how to arise as the deity, because that's actually the most important aspect. And other, like in Highest Yoga Tantra, they spend a lot of time, you know, you dissolve, you go through the whole dissolution of all the elements, you know, mirage, smoke, fire, down into emptiness, and then you meditate on the Dharmakaya, and then from the Dharmakaya you meditate on the Sambhogakaya, and then you arise as a deity, and it's all because we're they call it the taking the three bodies into the path. Well, we don't have that here. But it's implied, you know, when we dissolve into emptiness, from emptiness comes a tam, that would be the Sambhogakaya, and then that arises as Vaitara. If you don't mind, I just thought it was so good, the language, and I think part of it, it's probably Aku Sherab Gyatso's writing, but it's also, I think, David Gonzalez's translation. So it says, this is to establishing the imprint to attain the truth body through the accumulation of wisdom. So that's meditate on emptiness, because emptiness is the Dharmakaya, which is the truth body of the Buddha. So the Buddha has a truth body and a form body. The truth body is the emptiness, the mind of the Buddha, and the form body is the body of the Buddha. So it's called the Rupakaya, which can be divided into the Sambhogakaya and the Nimanakaya, the bodies of the Buddha. But if you just think of truth body and form body, so we generate the cause for the truth body by meditating on emptiness. And the form body, the body of the Buddha, by seeing ourselves as the deity. But the idea is that the whole time you are experiencing yourself as the deity, it's arising in emptiness. So one thing I was trying to think of an analogy, it's kind of like when you're going swimming. You know, you're swimming, but you know you're in the water, you know? You feel the water all around you, you know you're in the water. When you're the deity, there's emptiness. You know, emptiness is all pervasive all around you. You know, there's this ascertainment of emptiness that never actually leaves you when you arise as the deity. Now, I know we're not going to get that in the beginning, but the more you meditate on emptiness, and the more you do deity yoga, and the more you can meditate on emptiness while practicing the deity, then it becomes, over time, it becomes more and more like a felt sense, because that's more what it is. It's more of an experience. It's not an intellectual thing anymore. So that's why, you know, we have to do those analytical meditations of looking for the refuge. You know, you've all learned this, you know, looking for the refuting object, you know, the I, the I comes up, you know, and realizing that that doesn't truly exist. Well, it's that space that's left that, that then arises as a deity without that truly existent feeling of I coming back. So you want to maintain that sense of spaciousness when you arise as a deity. And the deity's made of light, you know. It's not this flesh and blood body. Anyway, I'll read this to you. To establish the imprint for attaining the truth body, you accumulate the collection of wisdom. Recite the Sobhava mantra, that's Asobhava Shuddha Sarvadhamma Sobhava Shuddhaham, which means all phenomena are empty as well as myself. So it's like external emptiness, internal emptiness, self and other. And purify the world and its beings into emptiness. At this time, you should not let your mind become concerned with anything external. Therefore, you should withdraw your surroundings, and once you have focused your thoughts internally on the mind itself, this is the words I like. I've never heard it quite like this. Once you have focused your thoughts internally on the mind itself, cause the meaning of emptiness to arise in your mind and place your mind in meditative equipoise. So when we go, Om Sabhava Shuddha Sarvadhamma Sabhava Shuddha, that's what we do. So you turn your focused thoughts inside on the mind itself. So this in itself takes a certain amount of skill. So that means there's no thoughts happening. You're just looking at nature of mind. There's just a spacious awareness, nature of mind, without coming and going thoughts. And within that, then, I like this, you cause the meaning of emptiness to arise in your mind. So it's like, you know, you're diving in the water. You know, you feel that you're in emptiness, you know. And place your mind in meditative equipoise. That means that you're stabilizing yourself in emptiness. Now, this is just the goal. In the beginning, you probably can't even stop your thoughts. But eventually, with practice, you can, you know. If you can, collapse dualistic appearances and prevent both the appearance factor and the ascertaining factor of any conventional object from arising. And I think that's a really good language. Mm-hmm. Prevent both the appearance factor, that means the external, right? And the ascertaining factor, that means the subject. So whatever, you know, so the ascertaining is me, but he's calling it the ascertaining factor, so it's not like I or subject, because the subject and the sense of I is gone by then. All there is the capacity to know something. You know, this I really like the ascertaining factor. I never heard that before. So there's the appearance, which is myself as the deity, and what ascertains that is a sense is also emptiness. So you have a sense of the subject as being emptiness, and what's arising is this appearance of the deity, right? So appearance factor and ascertaining factor of any conventional object from arising. That means the conventional world is no longer there when we're in the world of the deity. You know. At this point, recite everything becomes emptiness, and overcome the appearance of conventional objects as the factor of appearance. You with me?
Yeah. Can you repeat that? Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I had to read it a few times. At this point, recite everything becomes emptiness and overcome the appearance of conventional objects as the factor of appearance. So it's the factor of appearance is what's out there. If you think that this is utter nothingness, you have erred in your understanding. Instead, understand that you exist in dependence upon many other things that are not apparent and do not contradict existence in general. For example, it is similar to a group of people getting together. If you eliminate each individual, you won't have the appearance of a group. However, from the perspective of the mind, the group is not negated in general. So then there's a note. If you look at many people assembled together and recognize them as a group, and then subsequently look for the referent term group, you won't find anything other than a collection of people. This is another way of talking about emptiness. Therefore, there isn't anything among the people that can be identified as an inherently existent group. It's just like the chariot or, you know. A group of people still appears to and is apprehended by the mind, but nowhere is there a group, right? So That's what he's saying about everything that we're seeing. In the same way, although you use the phrase, from the crown of my head to the soles of my feet, each of your limbs is not your body. Yet by imputing the body to the collection of limbs, you establish your body and appears accordingly. And we've all studied emptiness, so. Every single phenomenon is also a collection of individual components that are merely imputed in the same way. A pillar, for example, earlier when it was a tree, you didn't develop the thought pillar. Yet afterward, after it's been cut down and turned into a pillar, then when the beam is raised, you develop the thought pillar. If you once again cut it into pieces and fashion it into something else, you will think that the new thing will not develop the thought pillar. Therefore, it is not established from its own side, but is conceptually imputed. You nominally impute emptiness on the vacuity that negates that any and all phenomena exist from their own side. So I'll read that again. You nominally impute emptiness upon the vacuity that negates that any and all phenomena exist from their own side. So then, meditate on the deity arising from this state of emptiness, like the appearance of a dream during sleep. It's good, isn't it? Sleep is used as an example for emptiness, and the dream appearance as an example for meditating on the deity arising from that state of emptiness. When you're in a deep sleep, you don't have either the appearance factor or the ascertainment factor. However, you can have the ascertainment factor for appearances when sleep becomes a little lighter and the appearance factor arises as various dreams. In the same way, because the mind is placed single-pointedly upon emptiness, you overcome both the appearance factor and the ascertainment factor of conventional appearances, and only emptiness appears. From that state, without losing the ascertainment factor, realizing emptiness, in other words, you're still experiencing emptiness, right? The appearance factor arises as the deity body. Isn't that a good description of deity yoga? I never read such a good one. And therefore you recite, from within that state of emptiness. You run the risk of making an error if you establish sleeping deeply as an example, for once you consider the world and its beings to be nothing more than a mental projection, you have fallen into the extreme of annihilation. During this time, however, if you meditate on the mere negation of tactile sensation and imagine that you are meditating on space, you won't fall into such mistakes. So Lama Yeshe used to say, you know, because most people don't understand emptiness, that you can just think of space. You know, I'm space, I'm in space, everything's space, because the space is the closest thing we have to emptiness. And then arising out of that is the deity. So we just pretend, you know, it's like we're being a really good actor. And we do the best we can. But, you know, we can create the cause for realizing emptiness if we remember all this while we're doing the practice. Yeah, so then it goes into arising as a deity. If you're interested in this practice, I really recommend getting this book. Mm-hmm. It's called The Healing Nectar of Immortality by David Gonzalez. It's translated by David Gonzalez. And it has two commentaries, the whole sadhana, and then it even has, if you were to do the actual retreat, the actual retreat would be a million mantras, a million Tara mantras. Then it even has the fire puja you do at the end, like a complicated fire puja like you do with a, you know, Yamataka or Vajrayogini or, yeah. Excuse me. And then there are these prayers of supplications to Tara at the back, which are really nice. Prayers to Tara.
What did you say the full title was?
It's called Healing Nectar of Immortality. And it's Dachen Ling Press.
Which press?
Dachen Ling Press. Dachen Ling. And all the books from Dachen Ling Press are quite good. And I think maybe now you can get them as e-books. I don't think you could before, but I think they've put them online now. So, because they're pretty expensive to ship from the state of Washington to England. Yeah, it'd be probably be like, I think it was like 50 pounds or something.
Oh, yeah, really. I've which got more, all these books.
Yeah, which is why I've, yeah, anyway. So, so I just wanted to kind of establish that. And does anybody have any questions before we get into trying to go over the visualizations?
Yes. Well, I think I have. Appearance factor. You can't.
That's what's appearing to us.
Yeah, that's. But you can. So, in a conventional.
Right now, the appearance.
Ordinary little mind. Like,
yeah.
You can have. You're as far as I could have it, an understanding of emptiness and yeah. appearance factor. Going sort of alternate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, that's what we do.
That's what you have, isn't
yeah.
it? So that's the
but now, what the best thing to do with our appearance factor, which you could call it conventional reality.
Alternating substance.
Yeah. But what we do, and in any case, you know, the break time, and now what the training is what Lama Zopa says over and over and over again, is that there's an appearance, right? And because of my hardware, it's just how my body, just how human beings are, that when my eyes see something and my ears hear something and I taste something, it automatically appears to exist from its own side. There's nothing we can do about that. But the deal is then within, you know, a 12th of a second, we believe that that appearance exists from its own side. So what we can begin to do to create the cause to understand emptiness is not believe that it exists from its own side. It appears. But we have to keep telling ourselves, you know, this is no different than my last night's dream. Or, you know, this is a mirage, or this is like a mirage, or Lama Zopa uses dream a lot. This isn't truly existent, even though it appears that way. So they say that even just doubting inherent existence shakes the foundation of samsara. So the thing we can do in the break time, as much as possible, is to remember that. And to remember that everything that appears to us appears in dependence upon the projection of my mind and the base out there. So, like in the last retreat, we were working a lot on mind training. And so the two things Lama Zopa talks about a lot is that. And the second one is, you know, everything I experience is dependent on my mind. So there's nothing happening out there that isn't dependent on my mind. So therefore, we cannot, there's no reason to get angry or upset or attached or anything, because it's not out there like it appears, you know. So, and I think maybe the hardest thing for us to understand is that everything we experience, we created the cause for. Because most of the time it seems like, that's happening to me, you know, he did this to me, she did this to me, you know. And so if we can train in that, you know, that nobody does anything to anybody, you know, that there's no victims, this is more sutra, but still, there's no victims, there's no perpetrators, there's just karma ripening. And if you've been hurt by somebody, it's very, very difficult to understand that, but that's what you have to work with. And not in the sense of, oh, I'm bad, I created the cause for this, that means I'm a bad person. It's not the way at all. It's just more like, you know, you throw an apple in the sky, it comes down. You know, it's just the law of the universe. It's not, it's a bad apple, and that's why it came down. You know, it's just, that's the nature of apples. They come down when you throw them up in the sky. You know, it's the nature of sentient beings to do stupid things, because we don't know any better. And so when karma ripens, there's no point in putting all this personal stuff in it, you know. He did this, and I did this, and I'm bad, and he's bad, and all these values that we do that just weigh us down and make us sick. You know, we just have to see it as the apple going up. If you throw an apple up, it falls down. You know? Human beings, everybody looks for happiness, and they look for it in the wrong way. That's all. You know? We things appear to exist from their own side, and from that comes self-cherishing, and from that comes, I'm going to take care of me before I'm going to take care of you. It just... how we evolved to save ourselves from the saber-toothed tigers. You know, we have to save me, we have to save my children. And so we get all this I, me, mine thing going on. And that's what causes us to get into trouble. And that's what causes people to harm each other. That's what causes people to be harmed. And so rather than putting a value judgment on it, it's just what it is. And so that, I mean, if we're talking about healing, because we're all healers here, you know, that is the most basic understanding you need to heal, is that there's no blame, there's no fault. You know, nobody's to blame. You know, it's just how, it's just what happened. You know, because a lot of people will take, oh, it's your karma. Oh, you know, I must be a terrible person to create that cause. It's not true at all, you know. We're all, I mean, the thing that, it's so hard because of the culture we grew up with. We all should never forget that we have Buddha nature, you know. That the only thing that's true about us is that we have Buddha nature. And that Buddha nature is empty. And it's also in the nature of love, you know. So all this other junk that we told ourselves since we were born, you know, about who I am and what I am, and that's what we're working to purify as the deity. So that's why deity yoga is important, that we have to have even a relative understanding, not just emptiness, but we also have to have a relative understanding that even my own ordinary self, you know, is a pure, worthy vessel of love and compassion, and, you know, like there's nothing wrong with us, you know. And I think that we all carry that kind of baggage around. And if you can think about that while you're doing the practice, you know, that you're purifying those concepts. Because we're talking about we're purifying inherent existence, but what comes from inherent existence is all those stories we've told about ourselves, you know. I'm not good enough, or I'm too good, or all the opposite. Oh, I'm the best in the world, you know. I don't think any of us are like that, but you know people that are like that. Maybe you might have met somebody. You know, all those ways we delude ourselves with judgments of I'm good, I'm bad, I'm pretty, I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm short, I'm tall, I'm, you know, I'm jealous. You know, all those things get purified into the experience of White Tara. So that's what's important. And now we're out of time. So I'll continue to go through the visualizations in the session. I'm still figuring out exactly how we're going to do it, but I think what we did this morning was okay. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to have a break, right? You don't want to sit there for 2 hours and do this whole thing. So as long as we take a quick break to get up and walk around, then we can come back and do the Amitayas bit, you know. And maybe I'll just go over a little bit more, because when you get to the Amitayas thing, there's three things that we do. And I just talked about it a little bit. But there's summoning your lost lifespan. Remember I told you that if you died an untimely death, you can bring that back. So when you're visualizing the nectars coming down, you can bring whatever years of life you lost in a previous life, you're getting it back. And then there's a deteriorated lifespan. So that has three parts. So the deteriorated lifespan was what I was talking about by bringing in the five elements. That's just your health. So we have earth, water, fire, air, and space. And I'll go over it, but earth is, you know, so we have yellow for earth and white for water and red for fire and green for air and blue for space. And so you bring those coming in. But then there's also a degenerated merit. Like you can lose your life because you've destroyed your merits. So then you you can bring back, you know, different things that you've done to be thinking about meritorious things coming into you, like, you know, the seven limbs or saving lives or all the stuff that you do to help other sentient beings. And then meditating on emptiness. And then the other one is degenerated commitments. So let's see, what is that one? I don't know, I don't even see what that is. Restore degenerated merit. I suppose, I mean, I'll have to read it again, but it looks like, oh, I see, it says here, well, you clearly appear as the Venerable Mother, light rays from the Mantra Rosary at your heart or her heart. Summon all the blessings of the body, speech, and mind of all the Buddhas and lineage lamas and dakinis, heroes and protectors, the seed syllables of the Sanskrit vowels and consonants, hand symbols such as Vajra and Bell and so forth, all dissolve into you, and so your commitments are restored. So to do that, you just visualize all the everything about Buddhism, you know, everything about the Buddhas, the Buddha, the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas, the heroes, dakinis, mantras, Vajras and bells are all pouring into you. Yeah, so that's those three. So that's four things so far then. You have the lost lifespan, the elements coming in, virtuous deeds coming in, and then, you know, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and mantras and Vajras and bells and, you know, those kinds of things are pouring into you.
So that, I got lost off as to what the five elements were.
Oh, earth,
was.
Water, fire.
No, I know what the five, sorry, oh. I know what they are, but what are they referring to? Or what are you working on?
Well, it's just that all diseases are caused by some kind of imbalance.
Okay,
so it's disease.
Right.
It's disease. Yeah, it's
okay.
Disease, you know?
Yeah.
Because we all know that most of us die from disease.
Yeah.
But say, you know, some people get a really bad disease and don't die. And that's because they have enough merit not to die. But the people who do get it, like cancer, and die, it's because they don't have enough merit to keep living. Which is why, if you have cancer, this is a really good practice to do. Because not only are you healing with the five elements, but you're bringing in extra lifespan, you're bringing in more merit, and you're purifying your commitments. Because we all know some people get terrible diseases and die. Some people live forever with AIDS, you know. Other people die right away. And according to Dharma, this is why. Which is why this is very interesting, you know.
Sorry to interrupt. Could you just go over the colors of the five elements?
Yeah. If you don't know them, yeah. Earth is yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Water is white, like milk.
Mm-hmm.
Fire is obviously red.
Mm-hmm.
Wind is green. And space is blue, dark blue. And they also, and in other tantras you really get into that, you know, with the five Dhyani Buddhas and all that. So however much you know about that, you can get into it, you know. You could be even bringing in the five wisdoms and, you know, you can kind of go to town. So, and so I thought that when we get into doing that, you know, I'll just let you do what you feel like you want to do. So you might want to write in your sadhana, you know, the different things you can do, and do one for a little while, and do another one for a little while, and do another one for a little while. And also don't forget that if you know someone, you can do it for them. So you can just put them at your heart, you know. And the other thing I wanted to say, too, is I believe, I'm pretty sure, because I was told to do this myself once, that those of you who are visualizing her on the crown of your head, you can still arise as a deity if you've had another deity practice. Say you've got Medicine Buddha, or you've got Chinrezig, or you've got, I don't know, I can't remember what, I know there's three of you. I think it's you and you and, is it you? I can't remember.
No, I don't have any highest yoga.
Yeah, well then just visualize your ordinary self. But if you do have another highest yoga tantra, you could do it that way. Or any, doesn't have to be highest yoga tantra. So, I think we said we're starting at 4:30. So does anybody have a question? Because most of the time we kind of go over and have a shorter break, but it's just up to you how long of a break you want.
Just one quick one. Are you saying about you visualize if you've got a person that mm-hmm. you're doing it for? When you said it's in the heart, is it in the drop of the tongue or the hum?
It doesn't really matter. There's two ways to do it. You can have a tam, and then in the drop of the tam, there's a hum.
Ah, okay.
And it's in there, which is tiny, tiny, tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way around, you can have a hum with the tam. But I think the way Chodron Rinpoche, he had a tam with the hum in it.
Yeah.
And so, but if that's way too complicated, you can just feel that person in your heart. You don't really have to, I mean, that would be so tiny, you know. But in really what you're doing, it's their life force anyway, you know. It's not the actual person, it's like their spirit, you know. Yeah. So, and the main thing I want to emphasize here too is, you know, don't squeeze the, you know, don't, if nothing comes to you at all, don't worry. Just know that it's happening, you know, just believe. Like I said, Kirti Center said faith and intention. And even Lama Tsongkhapa says, you know, if you just get a little white blob of, you know, just some white space, you know, and you know that's white Tara. And you just, because like right now, if I close my eyes, right, I know Charlotte's right there. You know, I can think about Charlotte. I mean, so if I close my eyes, Amitabha's up here. I don't have to, oh, Charlotte's wearing a gray shirt and she's got these pretty eyes and she's got, you know, this and that. And, you know, I don't have to do, I just have to know Charlotte's right there. Amitayus is right here. That's all you got to know. It's like, and when you think about, you know, you're inside, there's all these bubbles and, you know, these different eggs and everything. Like right now, if we close our eyes, we know we're in this room, right? It's like that. You just know you're there. And it's good to visualize all those bubbles because I think it's cool to know about peace and crease, control and wrath. You know, like today when I was out for my walk, I was doing some controlling practice with myself because there's just things about myself I'm just so tired of, you know. So, okay, let's get this thing.
You know, you just they're described as rings and then bubbles and eggs.
Yeah.
So first of all, I was thinking of a ring like a hula hoop. Yeah. Obviously, it's not like that.
Yeah.
So it's actually it's like an egg shaped.
Yeah.
Around the whole.
Yeah,
structure.
The rings in the heart. I mean, the wheel is in the heart. The wheel's in the heart. I there's a drawing of it in this book which you can look at, but I scanned it with my phone and sent it to Beth. And hopefully she'll print it for us. But you've seen those Dharma wheels, you know? Mm. It's just like one of those Dharma wheels, and it has these rims, you know, five rims. And Om Tarichi Tarichi So is right at the center. You can look, I'll leave the book out. And then you have the, you know, the vowels and the consonants and that. But, I mean, you don't have to visualize that. This is for pretty advanced practice, you know?
But and it's definitely horizontal, the wheel.
It's definitely horizontal. It's horizontal with the moon and the tom standing up. The moon and the tom stand up. I mean, the moon's flat. The tom stands up and the letters stand up. The letters are standing up and that you can either visualize them as silver or like pearl. Mm-hmm. So all the letters are standing up and then the oma, a, e, e, u, u, you know, those. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if they're...
Do they face in?
I don't know.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so if that's there at your in your center, can you read what if they're circling, so they must be facing you.
Yeah, makes sense they'd be facing you.
So then you can actually see not that I could do, but
yeah.
I can imagine that they were.
Yeah, you well, if you were sitting, if you were inside the time, then you would be reading them facing you, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then the colors are just like you're sitting in a. It's like an aura, you know. We've all seen pictures of auras, you know. We're in this light. It is the aura. It's our aura. What we're doing is we're creating and healing our aura, and we're creating a very powerful protection around us. And then even on outside of that is this white thing that's like this. It's like a round cone.
Like
two ice cream cones coming together. And they, yeah, and outside of that is like Vajras, and outside of that is fire. And so, like, there's so much protection going on here. And my sense, even though it doesn't say it, is that within this cone, of course, I mean, Tara, the front visualization Tara is inside the cone as well, and so is Amitabha. So all that's inside the cone. So it's not that hard to figure it out, you know. And so then you just do your best to feel like that's what's going on while we say the mantra. It's not that hard, really. We'll get it, you know. So,
it's a bit like sitting in a rainbow, really.
Exactly. Completely. It's exactly what it is. It's just not exactly the order of a rainbow. It's white, yellow, red, green, blue, and purple. It's kind of like a rainbow, isn't it? In a way. So, yeah, so that's it. And between each one is a layer of flowers. It's kind of cool, isn't it? Yeah. I've never seen a drawing of it. So, yeah. So that's it. So that's our practice. And that's what we're going to be doing. And in terms of what we do before... Oh, I didn't show you the mudras. We'll do that tomorrow. Because the mudras, if you've ever done nunes, it's the same nunes as the mudra nunes. And not the high Sogatantra nunes. So it's like this. Argyam is like that. Let me say Argyam. Yeah. Like that.
Okay.
And you know, if you just want to do the ones you know, I don't care. I'm just showing you. So Argyam is like that. Then Padyam, you turn over and it's like you're supposed to be picking up a flower. So it goes like that. Then Pupe is, that's all the flowers. Dupe is a stick of incense. I guess it's like that. Like that. Dupe is like that. If I do Argyam, Padyam, Pupe, Dupe. Aloke is a candle. Aloke, Kende, Nude. I don't know why, how this is perfume, but I guess you... It's both, like in High Sri Tantra, it's this way. What?
It's Gende, isn't it?
Yeah, Gende.
Oh, sorry,
Gende, yeah. So Gende's like that. I guess because you're spreading perfume on the chest, that's part of it. And then the new day is food, it's just like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Shapta is ringing the bell or going like that. Yeah, so it's Argyam, Padyam, Pube, Dupe. I think it's just Aloke, Gande, Nude, Shapta. So maybe we'll try the mantras. We'll try the mantras and the mudras. And I still think I'm going to admit it for the front generation. Just we'll do it for the self generation. So, yeah. Okay, let's take a break. But we need to dedicate. So would someone like to volunteer? I kind of pounced on Lindsay to do a dedication for us. It's nice. It's how we get to know each other better. Volunteers? Dedication?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, thanks, Neil.
So whatever virtue or merits or potential we've gained just from this listening and this discussion and listening to Paula, so we dedicate to our own quick enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings.
Thank you. So let's meet back at 4:30 or 20 minutes. Let's make it 4:35. Have a long enough break. And I'll see if I can get it all into the amount of time we have. And we have an hour and we'll be a little, yeah, two sessions we'll have between now and dinner time. Yeah. Okie dokie.